Good afternoon. So we're going to talk a little bit about 5 years later in a pilot that we started in 2006 and officially rolled out the service of lecture capture in 2007. And so we're going to talk a little bit about working very closely with faculty members to pilot the technology in 2006 and then those were 7 courses that we originally started with. To flash forward today, we have about 150 on an average per semester. Sometimes it's more than that. And so some of the lessons that we learned, some of the things that are in development for us, and something that I think is very valuable, and that would be our video that we have of 4 of the faculty members from different disciplines and how it changed their course in the way in which they teach pedagogically. After they all got through the notion that no one would come to their class if they captured the lectures and they were posted, it would impact attendance, but they found that not to be true. But as they went through watching their own courses, the way in which they changed their teaching is very powerful. So just a little bit about George Washington University. We're the other George in D.C., as we like to say. We're not Georgetown. We are landlocked. We're 4 blocks from the White House, so we have very, very little space, which becomes a factor when we start trying to roll out new classrooms and designing spaces, and when we have to retrofit equipment into existing spaces, we have to be very thoughtful about what we're doing and have a lot of planning involved. We have 3 campuses. 2 are in Washington, D.C., and the one's in Foggy Bottom. Another is on what we call our Mount Vernon campus off Foxhall Road. The 3rd campus is in Ashburn, Virginia, about an hour away from the main campus. We have approximately 25,000 students, depending on who you ask, mostly grad students of 14,000 and about 10,000 undergrad students. So our department is called Academic Technologies, or AT, and our mission basically is to support teaching, learning, and research. So we support anything on the pedagogical side of instruction. So it's basically anything to do with academic computing or anything to do in terms of course support for faculty, teaching, learning, and research. We have in our portfolio over 100 technology classrooms that we support on 3 campuses. But in addition to that, we have about close to another 100 on top of that that have either no technology at all or low technology. And in a lot of those spaces, faculty members either bring their own devices to those rooms or they check out equipment from 3 of our walk-in shop locations, for example, on our main campus. We have 14 computer labs and classrooms. We have over 60 staff members. In addition to that, we have some consultants that work for us, and of course, in addition to that, we have a plethora of student labor, or student wage and labor pool that support our labs and our classrooms and are really out and about supporting faculty. In addition to that, we have our ITL, or Instructional Technology Lab, which supports faculty use of technology. So these are the folks, the very brave individuals that support faculty with Blackboard. We're a Blackboard institution as our LMS. We have clickers or student response systems. We use Turning Point, everything from PowerPoint, you know, whatever they're trying to do within their courses, that department will support them. We administer a virtualized server environment where we have over 100 servers. We have our own call center. So most of the technology classrooms have voice over IP phones back to our call center. We remotely monitor into our classrooms, which is a key part of this lecture capture, because often we've had some issues with faculty members starting the lecture and maybe the microphone or the lavalier isn't turned on or there's some issue. So we have to be very cognizant and thoughtful about making sure there's no disruption or it's running smoothly. We have tiered support for both AV and IT. And after we started the pilot in 2006, rolled it out to a full service in 2007, I decided to create, through the advice of my staff, our own AV engineering team, because we began to redesign some of our classroom spaces. And instead of outsourcing that to external companies and vendors, we decided that we really knew what we needed ourselves, so we created this new unit, and we are in the process now of redesigning some of our existing classrooms, as well as our department designs new learning spaces at GW. So when new buildings are being rolled out, we design those spaces. So what we're going to do is talk a little bit about the architecture of what we've done. We're going to talk about some of our successes. We're going to show you two videos. One will show you the very beginning of this pilot about 5 years ago to show you the technology in the classroom, explain a little bit about that. And then the second video, as I said, are the four faculty testimonials. One faculty member in that group was a non-believer, so it's nice to see that he's come full circle. I'm sure some of you have that at your campuses. And then we're going to talk about future development with this five-year project, and then, of course, take Q&A at the end. Okay. So.
Thanks, PB. So I have the chore of explaining to everyone basically where we started and give some background on the actual program, and then the gentleman to my right get to tell you about some research we did after the first 5 years and some current development and where we're headed in the future. So to give a little background, as PB said, we started the program in 2006, and it was really driven around iTunes University. That was the big buzzword. We signed up. We got accepted. We were an early adopter of that. And that was really where our thought process was. What we didn't know is what the support load was going to be to capture in the classroom. And that was one of the first big drivers, to capture in the classroom, and then let's post that on an authenticated private iTunes University site. So as PB said, we started with six courses that we did in a pilot phase. Worked well. We expanded that a little bit in the spring semester. Of 2007, I think we had about 13 courses, and then we really opened it up. Hey, anyone who wants in, you can get in. One of the things that you'll see as a common thread throughout the entire presentation is we thought our path to success was really going to be in automation and ease of use. That in order to get adoption, we didn't want faculty members to have to think about anything to use the program. We wanted them to be able to teach. We wanted them to even be able to sign up to have that be as automated and as easy as possible. So a lot of our development, you'll see, revolves around that. And then in the future, we're going to talk about how we expand even beyond just lecture capture. So again, in 2006, one of the things we did is we wanted an automated system to be able to take those automated audio files, that's what we started with, and upload those automatically to iTunes U without any kind of staff intervention or faculty intervention. And we first developed that in-house, and then there were some products that later came out and had that integrated into their feature set, and we adopted that later. So in 2007 and 8, we went a step further than just audio. We wanted to be able to, you know, there was going to be power in visuals, right? Not necessarily just someone's head, but at least what's being presented on the screen. So that was important to us. We wanted to be able to capture files that gave you a richer experience. We'll get into, I'll let Yordanis talk a little bit more about web services and content management. But really, again, all of that was focused originally around iTunes U and limitations that, you know, it's not something that you buy out of the box, put a CD in and install. So we had to develop ways that our help desk could automate things and develop ways that internal staff could without having an admin that logs in and constantly does stuff in the system. We also later migrated to an appliance-based model. In 2009-11, we added some remote monitoring capabilities. What we discovered is that automation is great for adoption, but for support, it changes the support model, right? You don't have to have someone go in there and set something up, but you need to know when something's not working. So what we realized is we had to expand on and kind of change the process that we support the system. We got into active monitoring of individual lectures, where we kind of almost have like a pseudo knock center, where people can actually see what's going on real time. We also started to expand the footprint physically. We expanded out. We started in our main downtown Foggy Bottom campus and expanded to the Mount Vernon and Ashburn campus. So again, talking briefly, 37 classrooms is what we have right now that are enabled with full, you know, kind of presentation sources and audio. We also have 9 classrooms. I'll show you a video later that'll do a more enhanced video experience. In 2007, when we first opened it up away from pilot, we quickly jumped from 7, 13 to 100 courses that jumped in. And since then, we've kind of almost plateaued. We average around 150 a semester, sometimes a little above, sometimes, you know, one or two less potentially. And we average about 33,000 downloads from iTunes U. And this is, again, our private site. But as you see, as Yordanis and Eric are going to talk about, we're expanding what we think of with our program that we call Colonial Cast. It doesn't just have to be iTunes. It could be other publishing points. It could be other media distribution mechanisms. And so we're thinking about it from media in general. So again, just to touch on it quickly, Yordanis is going to touch on it more. Ease of use, right? We wanted to do single sign-on through Blackboard. We didn't want to create another authentication mechanism. Our penetration into courses with Blackboard is very high. We also wanted the ability to do course creation and scheduling within Blackboard. So a little form to fill out, and it's automated from there. And I'll let Yordanis talk more about the administration tools and some of the other APIs that we did. Our vendor of choice for course capturing ended up being Echo 360. So what I want to talk about a little bit, and then I'm going to show you a brief video, is our classroom infrastructure, especially when we first started. Captures VGA video sources. It became important to us to do automated camera tracking. Right? We didn't have the resources to have someone go in there and man a camera the entire time. And we didn't want to fix faculty members to a podium like I am now, especially those who are, you know, engaging within the class. Student microphones also became very important, but that also became tricky. We wanted to make sure that we would have the interaction and the, you know, natural conversations that take place from a question or anything from the students. But the spaces that we had weren't designed from the get-go to record. So how do we do that? And also, it's a mixed environment. The classrooms aren't going to just be recording classrooms. They're general use. So how do we implement that without having infrastructure there? And you'll see a video of that. We basically did a series of, kind of did a pickup pattern around the room and did a series of shotgun microphones. So it's off the tables. We didn't have the infrastructure to run there. But it's also a little bit easier to support. You don't have students who are going to break a mic that's sitting on the table. Faculty audio became important. If we rely just on a lavalier microphone, well, that may or may not work. That's got batteries. Someone's got to turn something on and off. So we created some custom boundary microphones that hang around where the faculty normally walk, that pick them up along with an audio microphone. So, you know, it became really important in classroom design that's where we need to focus, as PB said. So, you know, and again, we've expanded what we're thinking about with capture. Recently, we're going beyond just traditional lecture capture. We just designed a space that is a nursing simulation lab, and that's not a lecture at all. It's really a simulation of what's happening real world, either in an ER or in a patient bed. And we were lucky enough to win an AMX award for innovative classroom design for that. So let me show you a quick video. And this is old. You'll be able to tell, I'm in the video, how old it is by my hairline. It's significantly more than what it is now. So, but we wanted to show you again of where we started. So this is just a brief video of that classroom technology.
The challenge with the design of the space was really trying to keep it user-friendly to the faculty members. We wanted to have them be able to walk in and just teach, not really have to worry about how to activate or utilize the technology in the room. The other challenge was that we were using pre-existing high-tech classrooms. We weren't using spaces that we could redesign for capturing. These spaces are also used for classes that aren't captured. We put cameras in the room, a series of microphones that are installed on the ceiling, microphones that are installed in the ceiling to also capture faculty response in case there was a problem with a lavalier that they might wear. We put in a series of pads in the room that can call presets for cameras and zoom into tight shots when we know where they are. And when they're off the pads, the cameras will follow them around, so you can always get a shot of the faculty members in the room. Computer or laptop signals that they might be presenting, whether it be PowerPoint, website, or a document camera. They wanted to show a newspaper clipping in the room or something out of the textbook. All of that is also captured. For the streaming portion, both the video of the class and the presentation material is presented along with the audio. Students can zoom to different points in time and watch that. Currently, with capturing for the streaming portion of the project, we also capture the lectures via ColonialCast and offer them on iTunes U. What this provides are dedicated course pages for students where they can log into iTunes via Blackboard. What they end up getting are the presentation material. They're files that are the presentation material along with the audio. Students can download those. They don't need an active internet connection and watch them anytime, really. If they're on a plane, they can watch them on their laptop or an iPod or an iPhone or really any media player. It doesn't have to be an Apple product.
So with that, I'll turn it over to Yordanis Baharu and then later Eric Alvarado, who can talk about where we're going from here.
So I'm going to be talking about the support we provide to faculty members and share some feedback that we have both from faculty members and students. Every semester, at the beginning of the semester, we send out an email, a broadcast email, a personalized email to all faculty members teaching in the lecture capture classrooms. We tell them what resources are available. We give them information about the instructional technology lab. We give them the phone number, the email address. That's the group that can provide them assistance with implementing this in their courses. We also conduct workshops in the instructional technology lab throughout this the semester, but we also have special workshops that we hold every summer. It's a three-day workshop, a series of three-day workshops that we have over the summer. And in every one of those workshops, we provide opportunities for faculty members to come and experience by using lecture capture and trying to encourage them to use it for their courses. We also established partnerships with some key departments, mostly departments that have a lot of their courses that are being captured. We have good partnerships with the business school, School of Nursing, as JP mentioned, and we also have quite a number of language classes that also use the service. Some of our successes. So as John was talking about, one of the main things we wanted to do as we started this project was to eliminate any barriers that would prohibit faculty members from using this service. We wanted to make the technology transparent. We wanted the faculty members to just be able to teach as they normally do. So what we did was, using the APIs both from iTunes, Blackboard, and Echo 360, we created some self-service tools using Blackboard, because that's generally where most faculty members have most of their course materials. So for what we were trying to do was, if a faculty member wanted to use iTunes U or they wanted to schedule a lecture capture, they would simply log into Blackboard, fill out a form to create an iTunes U course space or a lecture capture recording, and they're literally done. From there on, they just walk into the classroom, put on a lavalier mic, and the recording happens automatically. We also, using the same APIs, enhanced the support for our internal help desk so that they can look up any issues that faculty members may have in terms of enrollment, in terms of access to students, lecture files not showing up, and so on. We expanded the program, as PB said, from 2006, where we had about six or so courses, to over 300 courses being recorded, an average of 300 courses being captured every year. rather than telling you what faculty members think about the service, we're actually going to get them to tell you what they think about the service and some of the experiences that they've had using this service.
My name is Cynthia Dowd, and I teach organic chemistry at the undergraduate level, so the second semester of undergraduate. I have about 70 to 80 students in that class.
I teach several classes involving large class sizes. I have a section of the introductory course on world history, alternating with a section of the introductory course on European history. The classes might be anywhere from 75 to 250 students.
My primary responsibility is to teach statistics and research methods to doctoral candidates and advanced master's candidates. And I use Colonial Cast in every single course that I teach.
I was in the project management program for nearly 15 years. And for all that time, we've had a what we like to call a dual mode single program. By dual mode, I mean that we have distance that's based on the campus lectures. We started 15 years ago with mailing video cassettes out, and we've come a long way since then to a state-of-the-art system where recordings start when you walk into the classroom.
The decision to capture lectures using Colonial Cast was a natural follow-on from general changes that had crept into my teaching style as technology changed. As I began to change from chalk on slate to marker on whiteboard, and finally to projected PowerPoint presentation, the idea of being able to capture the PowerPoint presentations to be reviewed on by the students on their own time was a very attractive idea, so I thought I'd give it a try.
I've taught the course for 5 years, and I started to straight lecture, give the lectures without any kind of recording, and then 1 year I tried simply audio recording the lectures, and that worked okay. There was a lot of manipulation that you had to do of the files to get the files online and available to the students. But then I really wanted to move to video and audio capture of the material, because with chemistry, specifically organic chemistry, there's a lot of visual manipulations that the students have to get accurately in their notes, and I was noticing in the student notes that there were a lot of mistakes. And if there are mistakes, then there's the tendency for the student, or the possibility that the student will not learn something correctly. And I thought if we could video capture it, then they would have a record of how I write down a structure, and then they would be able to learn.
The students that I'm dealing with come from different countries, a wide variety of different countries. And again, having Colonial Cast there so that they can overcome whatever deficiencies they have with regard to understanding English on the fly makes a huge difference for these students.
Because it's, you know, sort of contained in the electronics of the Colonial Cast system, all of the information that I'm writing down on the document camera is captured in the video capture, where that wouldn't happen if I was sort of a board writer.
The students get to study the original lecture and get to think about it and come with questions. So that's, I think, from the student point of view, and even from the professor's point of view, I enjoy it because I can clarify things that occurred during the class that maybe went by too quickly in the class, so the campus students might not have had time to ask a question.
It saves me an incredible amount of time, because I'm spending time now dealing with questions that are offshoots from the basics that I've taught in class, which is what I should be doing. The students should be asking, oh, that was an interesting point. I wonder if you could expand on that or elaborate on that. And now I have time to do that, because I'm not answering questions about the basics. The students are getting the basics through Colonial Cast.
It gives me a fallback that I can refer students to when they need to review or repeat material. I like it because it keeps me on my toes, because I have to be careful that I am saying things in a clear and understandable way and not repeating myself and trying to manage my tendency to go off on tangents. And it has been helpful at various points when I have had to travel, or when I've been ill, or when students miss class and want to catch up on it.
You can have a discussion with a student where a student might say, you talked about something in the lecture and I didn't understand it, and I might respond, well, at what point in the lecture? And say, well, 4 minutes, you know, into this section here, and I can go look at those 4 minutes and I can come back to him and say, well, here's what didn't you understand about what I was saying, and the student will tell me. And then I think it enables us to get to the same point in misunderstanding, if you will, earlier.
With a Colonial Cast set of lectures from one of my semester-long classes, we were able, with the help of the Instructional Technology Lab at my university, to edit down a captured lecture, removing extraneous material directly related to the semester and the time of year that class was meeting, and breaking it up into 20-minute chunks so that it could be used in an online class in a format that the students could get at quite easily and that would come in smaller segments so that downloads wouldn't be a problem or attention span lagging wouldn't be a problem.
Whether or not you're fully online or fully on campus, there's going to be electronic components, and the electronic components are going to increase. There's no question about that. And we can all build our individual libraries that we can transfer from course to course and take advantage of and give students a very rich experience in terms of the information that they can access in all the different formats.
The feedback that I get from my students is just it's qualitative, it's palpable. You can hear it, you can see it, you can feel it, you can get a sense that these students really are saying, thanks to Colonial Cast, I'm really getting a much deeper understanding much more quickly of the material, and it's under my control. I don't have to feel as if I'm beholden to the one lecture or the one class session, and if I don't get it, then I'm in big trouble. From a student's perspective, that's a huge advantage.
I've received very positive feedback from the students. I've sort of made careful notes about this because it's something that I want to evaluate, the students' perception. I find that few students use the video files at the beginning of the course, but as we draw towards exam time, and particularly final exam time, their usage goes up. And I'd say right now about two-thirds of the class, at least by raising their hands, say that they use the video capture.
Places where I would personally be tempted to try to expand my abilities in the technology side of teaching would be a better integration, possibly, of live video, somehow embedding it or making it accessible on a different website that I could switch to in the middle of the lecture, to show movie clips, documentary clips, live TV, or other kinds of action video in the class.
Although I tend to use Colonial Cast off the podium computer that is in the classroom, because I have a tablet computer, if I wanted to, I could yoke the audio to the tablet computer and write on the slides at the very time that I'm presenting them, because it is a tablet. Although I tend not to do that as much as I used to, that would be an additional capability that Colonial Cast currently does provide. And I suppose I could use that in a more extended way than I do.
Some surprises. Reviewing a Colonial Cast lecture is a great way to determine some things about your own lecture style. You hear your voice, you see your PowerPoint, you're not distracted by hearing it through your own ears, you're hearing what the students heard, you're noticing every you're noticing every point where the PowerPoint slide stays on the screen for too long, as I mentioned earlier, or you zip through points too quickly. It helps in thinking about construction and pacing of a lecture, much as having the opportunity to watch yourself being videoed in a lecture setting gives you a chance to see from an outsider's perspective what you're doing as a teacher.
When I first started doing the video capture and in discussion with my colleagues, I was afraid that that this would become sort of more of an online course, that students wouldn't come to class. And in a class of 75, I was worried that I would see a significant drop-off in class attendance, and that, interestingly, proved not to be the case.
I'd like to see live streaming so that many of our distance students who are in the same time zone express the desire to occasionally participate in a class in real time, and that would be tremendously useful.
I've never adapted clickers into my large lecture classes, but if it were possible to field a question and get student input in real time on the screen, captured as part of the lecture, that might be fun. It might be an interesting way to try to make a large lecture class a little more interactive and a little bit more Socratic in a way than it typically is.
It would be interesting to me to know how many students are using this, which lectures, which portions of the semester, and then which students are using it the most. It will help me understand how students, like which students are having problems, maybe which lectures are having problems, so which material I need to focus on a little bit more. And I think that would be useful feedback on both sides, both for the student and for myself.
Colonial Cast was a surprise. I did not say I needed it. You know, the Academic Technologies Unit figured out that this might be worth doing and said, would you like to try it? And I said, sure. And the next thing I knew, I was doing it. So I wish I could say that I was behind the idea. I had nothing to do with the idea, and somebody else had something to do with the idea, and I simply implemented it, and it was great. I'm in the same sort of boat here. You've got Colonial Cast. It seems to work very, very well. It seems to be filling a need, and I can't think of anything in addition that I'm going to need above what Colonial Cast does. But that isn't saying that there isn't something else. It's just saying I haven't thought of anything else. The Academic Technologies Unit has really done a nice job of getting ahead of me on this one. And if there is something else, I'm looking forward to Academic Technologies telling me about that, and I'll try that one out, and we'll see how that works.
I'll just quickly share just one point on this slide. We also surveyed students this last semester. We did it on, we surveyed about six classrooms, classes ranging from history to statistics. And one key point that faculty members are mostly worried about is attendance. And the second bullet point is a good point to that. More than half the students disagreed or strongly disagreed that having the recordings would make it convenient for them to skip class. And I'm going to pass it on to Eric, who's going to be speaking about some of the lessons learned and our future development plans.
So I just wanted to remind people, our lecture capture system is Colonial Cast. It's based off our mascots, and obviously the buzz thing to do back in 2006 was slap cast at the end of your mascot, and there you go. Lessons learned. 5 years of doing this, we took some time over the past spring to go and say, what do we pick up? Managing the faculty demand for electric capture poses a challenge for classroom schedules. So obviously, since we're landlocked, it becomes an issue because now you got to put in general purpose classes that may not be using electric captures into the same spaces that are demanding it. And that's a major challenge for us as a university. The other element is the electric capture hardware, the roadmaps, are ever-changing. I mean, we're all in technology. We're all familiar with this. It's nothing new. But you have to sort of predict what's coming down the pipe and see if it still fits, if it still applies for where we're going. And, you know, we went with Echo 360. We started the program with AnyStream with a resident PC, a video capture card inside, and then slowly adopted to appliances and now to a new appliance. And we have to stay ahead of that. And keeping good relationships with the vendors was absolutely critical. One major thing, and John hit on this, automation does not mean less support. And we learned that the hard way. There's this expectation if you think about it, a faculty member comes in, everything's working. It's natural. And when it's not working, they're like, well, what happened? How did you drop the ball? And for us, it was like, wow, wait a second. It's automated. What else do you need from us? And it turned out that they really want it solid. So we actually had to come up with remote monitoring pieces and remote management pieces and even redundant systems for key lectures, because some of our lectures are going out to the dual mode programs, distance ed. So if you miss out a lecture, a group of students are totally out. So you have to put in redundant systems. And that was something that we had to learn and implement very quickly. When we first started off, somewhat to this day, we leverage just the student newspaper, the faculty newspaper, mass mailing. We have mailing set for each of the classrooms and say, hey, if you want to do lecture capture, let us know, send us this email, go Blackboard, and it's all automated. And what we're finding is that we're hitting this glass ceiling. I mean, we're only doing a total of 5,000 classes that are happening across an academic year, and we have a smaller percentage. We want to break that ceiling. And the key is faculty outreach. We have to reach out to the faculty members and share some of these faculty stories and then also our experiences and try to find out what they're looking for in an electric capture system or in whatever they might be looking for with regards to distributing their content. students, what was interesting is students that were online getting streams wanted offline access. And in other cases, students that had offline access being able to download it wanted the streaming. And we couldn't figure out which way to go, so we actually had to provide both, which again comes back to more support. The video was actually, according to our data, was actually an important element. And that was something we were a little shocked on. At first, we only had a small number of video classrooms, video-based classrooms, so camera-based systems. And what we saw is the data and the number of captures and the number of downloads was coming in pretty hot on a video basis. So now we're looking at potentially expanding the number of video spaces as well. Recording the audience, as John was saying, is a challenge. You know, you look at microphone patterns within a room. You know, someone slams their book. That becomes an issue. One of the other pieces that was requested is small group discussions. Well, how do you do that if you're micing the entire classroom? How do you delineate between the individual groups? That becomes an interesting challenge that we can't overcome yet. But we're looking at that. Resolutions. I mean, computers these days are coming in all different resolutions. The industry just literally drives it. The appliance is trying to catch up with it. And you have resolutions that are, when a faculty member comes to their laptop, they connect in, they get nothing on the screen. So now we have to go in the field, figure out what resolution they should be working on, and then get them to remember that from that point on, which, again, is not always guaranteed. So where are we going? We're trying to shift the demands for what the students need, what the faculty members need. We are trying to move to an anytime, anywhere creation model. And then we're also trying to increase the support even further, and then also increase our outreach to our faculty members. Looking at the ECHR study, and what we did is we put it side by side, and you can look at this later on when you download. But we are actually in par between what is the base in all the institutions and what GW is looking for. And we're seeing that the demand for video is there. The students feel that the video and the captures are important for their learning. One key piece, and I do apologize for the small font here, but the second line, I mean, we are seeing the same penetration, if not higher, slightly higher, for smartphones. Why aren't we moving to mobile for both production as well as for consumption? So, obviously, for us, our future development is we need to increase the amount of vodcast capabilities in targeted classrooms. Our classrooms, our video-capable classrooms, tend to be the higher numbers. So 100 seats, 200 seats are better. There are a lot more classes that are looking at the 50-seater. So we're trying to look at that and see where we could place video capture. Leverage the personal and mobile capture technology. Everyone's carrying a smartphone. Everyone has a mobile device. Leverage the software, the tools that are out there to meet that demand, to actually address the demand that you don't have enough spaces on your campus. Faculty members and even students, if you're doing that type of pedagogy, have the device on them. Leverage that. Echo, if you're an Echo customer, they actually have a personal capture license you can invest in. They also have an ingest piece of software that you can allow the faculty members to use any type of device to record and then upload it into their website, and it actually renders it and distributes it to the actual publishing points that you might actually have. And then VoiceThread, that's another tool that we're leveraging. We learned that from Penn State. If you move to a mode where students can actually upload their own multimedia content and then also collaborate, that's another key way to get around the personalization and mobility. We start off with iTunes U. We're still iTunes U. And we also do streaming as well. What are the other distribution points? YouTube. Are there any other pieces? Do we package it? So we're trying to look at what are the trends and actually look at those other distribution sources as a possibility. As you heard Professor Chaffee say, live webcasting. Students want to be able, for instance, they're sick or whatnot, be able to still be part of the class. Or if they're trying to take in distance mode, they don't want to wait in an asynchronous fashion. They want to be there at the same time. So looking at that, highlighting some of the mobile capture technologies. Swivel, I don't know if you've seen that. Basically, you put an iPhone in a charger or in a stand, and then you wear a little dongle, and then basically wherever you walk in the room, it's capturing and following you around. And then you could take that and package it, leverage that. Mobile electric capture cart, we didn't do this yet, but we're working on it in the sense that if you don't have a room that actually has electric capture, just wheel this in, you're good to go. Again, another future thing to address the fact that for us, being space is an issue in a premium. And then lastly, the support and outreach. Continue to optimize the operational support. Figure out ways to deal with things and deal with the concerns of faculty members and for students and optimize for that. Establish relationships with key faculty members, with key departments, because that's the way to break that glass ceiling, especially for us and potentially in your institutions, to get to that next level. And then target, we specifically reached out to key faculty members who are our early adopters and seeing how they interact with some of these emerging technologies, and then use them as the faculty champions to actually convince other faculty members into using those technologies. Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Just a reminder, please come up to the microphones. We can take your questions.
I'm wondering if you're doing captioning, and broader question is, how are you approaching accessibility with the with your Colonial Class system?
So, very good question. Did everyone catch that? Captioning. So, how are we handling captioning and dealing with accessibilities? We haven't addressed it yet. However, I have met with our accessibilities department. The ecosystem has the ability to actually shoot off to a captioning entity and be able to overlay the captioning channel into a capture. The other thing, as part of, as we look at other distribution points, YouTube actually has a beta program that will go through and attempt to render captioning for content that's been captured and then be able to use that and actually feed that into streams. So that's the other reason why we're trying to look at other publishing points, because there's other technologies that are being utilized to address specifically accessibility. Any other questions?
Question from an online participant. Did you have to get permission to record your students in the room?
So the recording of students, and specifically the rooms that actually have the student cameras, they are part of the dual point programs. So they're already, as part of that program, they're already made aware that they, any questions that they may ask or if they're on video will be recorded accordingly. For the other video rooms, they're only one directional. It's really just targeting the faculty members, so we don't capture the students. Similar to, I think I've seen that at Stanford, MIT, there's like a frame that they stay within, and then the camera shot is up to that point, so we don't grab the students in those instances. Any other questions? Oh.
When you push your recordings out to iTunes U, do you record all three streams, so the PowerPoint, the video, and the audio?
So right now, we only, for the push out to iTunes, we only focus in on VGA and audio. For the video rooms, we also have, an alternate streaming source where they can actually watch the video feed as well. But for now, it's just the VGA and audio.
Does the technology exist to get all three streams?
I don't think so. It's something
But I mean to iTunes U, not...
Yeah. John, you want to take that?
So,
other way. It was already on.
Hello? Okay. So the problem you have with that is that typically what you're doing is you're trying to do synchronous of two video streams. So what a lot of these technologies are doing is they're taking two input sources and they're syncing it and they're time coding it. So they're actually, there almost needs to be a third party, because it's not one single video file. There has to be a time code that's going to sync the two sources. So there really isn't anything out there, with the exception of if someone does post-processing, where they're doing kind of a video switch between back and forth, so you have a single video file that maybe shows, and then you do a camera switch to that presentation source and back. So that's really a post-processing technique rather than an automated one.
And completely separate question, you may not be able to answer, but if I wanted to set up the least expensive version of what you're doing, what's an approximate price point for a room? Not the support part, but just the technology in the room.
I would say, to be honest with you, it depends on what you decide to do from a vendor standpoint. I mean, I would say walk the floor and talk to some of the recording companies. It's really going to be licensing at that point and what you decide to do. If you have some sort of video source and an audio source, and you're not necessarily worried about, you know, amplification in the room, you don't need a DSP, if you've got some of those sources already there and the room's built that way, then it's really going to be a licensing thing and then what kind of feature set you want on that point. So I would say they're going to probably answer that better than me.
academics to annotate their lecture recordings and put them in a discussion area. Are you aware of anybody else working on this?
What's that? Yeah. So, as I was just talking to my colleagues, VoiceThread is basically the tool that we're trying to leverage with that to basically do the annotation in line with regards to the content that's being recorded. Beyond that, that's really as far as we've actually looked with regards to ANSE, because the VoiceThread component actually solves multiple problems that we're trying to attack. So.
How come you guys chose Echo 360 versus other vendors?
Versus the others?
Yeah, versus the others, or even a homegrown solution.
Well, to be honest with you, we actually started a bit with a homegrown solution. And as Eric referenced, we used AnyStream Aprizo, which was them. A lot of it started with a collaboration between us and that company. Anyone who knows Echo, they're actually pretty close to the Washington, D.C. area. They're based out of Sterling, Virginia. We developed a way to do automatic uploading into iTunes U right when, you know, Apple opened it up for applications to apply to iTunes U. So they actually worked closely with us on developing some of those tools. From there, to be honest with you, we had an established relationship, and we've been happy with their product roadmap. Every once in a while, we'll do an evaluation with another vendor, and there really hasn't been anything that's jumped out to make us do a holistic switch. The history is from our working together, and then I think that they're on par with anyone else out there.
And to pile on with that, so what we try to do is every 3 years or so we did this once with regards to the electric capture system, some of our own technologies, we go and visit either like the EDUCAUSE vendor booth or John and his team actually attends Infocom, AB trade conference, and, you know, visit Tegrity Media Sites, some of the other Dell was doing something with regards to that, and try to do a comparison with regards to base level requirements that we're looking for. Automation, as you can see, was key for us, scheduling, APIs to tie into other systems so we can actually tie it into our front end, and try to do apples to apples comparisons and make sure that we still have the right product for what we're looking for.
You talked about redundant systems. Were you talking about a redundancy in the capture appliance or redundancy throughout the cameras and audio system? And if on the redundancy it's in the appliance, what was causing that? Did you find that? Or?
Right. So with all our systems, there's always going to be single points of failure. So with regards to the microphones, as John was saying beforehand, you have the lavaliers, we have the podium mics, we have a boundary mic up on top, we have mics in the field, so we try to set up redundant systems with regards to that. With the appliance off the video switcher, we'll actually fork off two sources and actually send them down two separate appliances, so at least we have, if one dies, at least we have the content on the other one. And then even bring it back into the server, if there's a situation where the server's not listening, then at least we know we have the capture somewhere so we can actually get to it. So setting up, you're not going to have a foolproof system in the sense it's 100% redundant, but trying to at least get the content with regards to having it somewhere so you can actually access what was actually how we were trying to do redundant systems.
What intellectual property concerns have you been raised, and how do you address those?
It's something we're looking at addressing. When we first start off with Colonial Cast, we basically went forward saying, look, you know, the content's out there. We're trying to work together as a university. It's questions that have come up with us. I don't want to say we sort of led with the technology first and then follow up the policy, but essentially the end result was regards to that. Now we're getting to, okay, who owns the content? From distribution perspective in those types of pieces.
I think the other thing to piggyback on what Eric's saying with that is twofold. One, faculty aren't forced into the program. It's an opt-in program. So if there are concerns, chances are they may or may not opt into the program. The other thing is that we restrict our content currently to those enrolled in the course, both on the Blackboard and on the iTunes UN. So only students enrolled are getting that content. It hasn't been, the things that we posted publicly haven't been course related.
Just to piggyback on that, that's the key point, the authentication, the requirement for that prevents some of the distress by others. We are, as an institution, looking at removing that potentially and what that might do, which is a whole other issue.
All right. Thank you for attending. Have a nice